Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 739. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about skiing and hiking, whale watching and kayaking, totem poles, and a steam clock as we go to Vancouver, British Columbia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Vancouver. I'd like to welcome back to the show David Brody from Travel in 10 podcast at travelin10.com, who's come to talk to us about Vancouver, British Columbia. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Chris.
And I say welcome back to the show. I think this is David's fourth appearance, going way back to a show we did in the hundreds on Cambodia, and a show we did in Fiji's at 445, and a show we did on Bali just about a year ago. And then we have talked about Vancouver in the show, but I checked, it was episode 60. So I believe it would be in the fall of 2006, which I'm pretty sure Vancouver is exactly the same. Is that correct, David?
That's right. That's right. Oh, it's changed a little. We've had a Winter Olympic since then. We've had a pandemic now since then. So it's definitely changed a little bit.
Got it. Okay. Well, and why should someone go to Vancouver?
A, it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I mean, you've got mountains, you've got rainforest, you've got ocean all side by side, and you can do everything from golf to skiing to whale watching in a day. It's really got sort of everything, and particularly for somebody who loves nature and loves seeing the outdoors, a lot compacted in a very small area, but then also a ton to do from a cultural perspective, great restaurants, a mix of different cultures from around the world.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
That's a good question. I mean, it depends how many days you've got. I mean, if you're here on a short visit, I would focus on Vancouver itself because there is no shortage of things to see right in the city itself.
Well, we usually target about a 1 week trip. And so I think that is going to include some side trips that we're going to do while we're there.
Well, for sure then. I would say if you're here for a week, then there is a ton of places that are within an hour and a half, 2 hour drive or boat ride from Vancouver that give you a ton to see and do. Everywhere from Whistler, Whistler Blackcomb, probably one of the best ski resorts in North America that you've got. It's about a 2 hour drive down the Sea to Sky Highway here. You've got all the Gulf Islands and Vancouver Island that are just a short ferry ride away and tons to see and do there. And then a ton of cool little driving trips that you can do just out of the city as well.
Excellent. Well, let's start in the city. First of all, is there a place that you would recommend we stay in terms of a particular neighborhood in Vancouver?
Yeah, a bunch of great hotels right in the downtown core. It really depends on sort of budget-wise where you want to go. If money is no object and you're just looking for the best sort of Vancouver experience, one of the places I would gravitate towards is the Fairmont Pacific Rim. You're right down on the waterfront, right in the center of the city. You're across from Canada Place, which if you've seen any pictures of Vancouver, you've probably seen the sort of iconic sails. It's sort of one of the two main iconic buildings in Vancouver that you're directly across the street from. Great ocean views. They've got a great spa and stuff there as well. If you're on a bit more of a budget, some nice sort of boutique hotels. Probably one of my favorites is a place called The Opus, which is in Yale Town, which is a really cool district of town where used to be a lot of old warehouses and things that 30, 40 years ago were converted into boutiques, restaurants, galleries all around there. Lots of great shopping and restaurants, and it's a cool boutique hotel as well.
Excellent. And Yale Town, I don't know, so we're going to have to get back to that. And then what am I going to do, let's say, my first day in Vancouver?
first day in Vancouver, something everybody's got to do when you're here is go tour Granville Island. Mm-hmm. It's a market that's been here since the 70s. It was an industrial area that was redeveloped into a public market where they've got fresh seafood, a lot of cool vendors and booths and stuff there. But the other thing you're going to find on Granville Island is a lot from a cultural perspective as well. There's a few different galleries there, a lot of artisans sort of making things, some great restaurants, some of the best restaurants in town on Granville Island. There's a place called Edible Canada, which is like a collection of everything I would say on the menu is probably you would find within 100 miles or 200 miles of Vancouver. I mean, it's all great local dishes and a constantly changing menu. A great place for Canada doesn't have any really specific Canadian cuisine, but a lot of great regional dishes from across the country. And Edible Canada sort of brings them all together and all made with local ingredients. So that's a great spot to check out on Granville Island.
Well, now when you say that Canada doesn't have any cuisine, I'm thinking more of Vancouver, may not. If I'm on the east coast of Canada, there are some dishes that are uniquely Canadian. I think of poutine, for instance.
There is a few. There's beaver tails and poutine.
Beaver tail,
yeah. Okay. That's right. And here, I mean, what the West Coast is really known for is fresh seafood. Salmon for sure, is at the center of what you're going to find at a lot of the restaurants here in town.
Excellent. After Granville Island, what are we going to do? And how are we going to get to Granville Island, first of all?
Well, if you're staying at either of the two hotels that I recommended, you're only about a 5-minute walk away from one of the Aquabus stations, which is this cool little commuter bus on the ocean, right? It only takes about 10 or 15 people, and it tootles around to just a few of the main attractions around the downtown area. So it'll take you to places like Science World. It will take you to Yale Town. It will take you to Granville Island Market. It's definitely the best way to get to Granville Island Market. You really get to see a beautiful view of the city from Cole Harbor, the main harbor in downtown, as you come through.
And we're not then in the harbor at this point, but we're still in False Creek, I think, if I'm correct, to get to Granville Island. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. False Creek is where one section of the ferry runs. And then, sorry, I got that wrong. Cole Harbor is actually on the other side. That's where the Fairmont Pacific Rim is. And then, that's right, False Creek would be where most of the Aquabus stations are.
Okay. Yeah, I almost skipped over that in terms of how to get there. But getting there is half the fun with the little Aquabuses. They're cute. They're adorable.
So. They are. And you don't even, I mean, really, if you're going to stay, if you're only here for a few days, you really don't even need a car. I mean, you can right from the airport now, the SkyTrain comes right into the main international terminal at the airport, will bring you right downtown to your hotel. And then from there, for sure, you can do the Aquabus. And thankfully, we were probably the last city in North America to get ride-sharing services approved, but we finally just got Uber and Lyft have come to the city, and you can easily do ride-sharing and stuff to get around some of the main attractions throughout downtown as well.
Okay. Excellent. Where to next?
Probably from there, you'd want to do a bit of a walking tour of the downtown area. Places like, there's a fantastic Chinatown in downtown where you've got a bunch of great local restaurants. Bao Bay is sort of a very cool modern take on Asian Pacific food, which is a great spot in Chinatown. A lot of cool restaurants and shops throughout there. Robson Street is your shopping street in the downtown core. And then the Vancouver Art Gallery down there is another great stop as well, which features a lot of First Nations art you'll find there. But a really great place if you're sort of into First Nations and Indigenous art is just a short drive away on the University of British Columbia campus, the Museum of Anthropology there. Oh, probably one of the best collections of First Nations art and Aboriginal art in the world. Certainly the best collection that you would find from the West Coast of Canada, featuring Bill Reid, who's sort of a very iconic Canadian artist. His largest and most iconic, well-known piece, The Raven, is sort of the centerpiece of the museum there. But then they've got just a whole range of things tracing back thousands of years that you can see.
And now he actually has his own gallery, I think, in Vancouver.
He does.
If I'm not mistaken. Okay.
And that one's right in the downtown core. You could even walk to that from the two hotels that we mentioned earlier, to the Bill Reid Gallery. It's a small gallery, but definitely worth seeing. I mean, lots of great pieces there as well and would make a great stop.
Excellent. Where to next?
Science World, another sort of great stop, particularly if you're here with family, and even if you're not, just to see it. It's like Canada Place, probably the other most iconic building in the city. It was built for Expo 86.
I was there for Expo 86.
You were there? So was I. That was one of the first times I came to Vancouver, as a matter of fact.
That was the first time I came to Vancouver. Well, yeah, I think it was.
There you go. Well, you would have remembered Canada Place was the Canada Pavilion, Science World was the entrance, basically, to Expo 86, and now has been converted to a science museum.
Well, and it was a science dedicated to science during the expo, as I recall, as well.
That's right.
Yeah, that whole False Creek area there was where the World's Fair was in 86. Most of the buildings being gone, those are the two that I can think of that remain. I don't know if there are other ones that I'm forgetting about.
Those are certainly the two iconic ones that are left over from Expo 86. And a lot of the fairgrounds of Expo had then still been undeveloped for a number of years. But then during the Olympics in 2010, that became the Athletes Village. So now in between Science World and Granville Island, and you could really walk between the two, you know, it'd be about a 15 or 20 minute walk. You could go through the Olympic Village, which is a newer development from 2010, and lots of great stops throughout there as well.
Well, and when you walk it now, you won't have to walk past the 300,000 people I had to walk past when
That's
I was
right.
doing it in 86. So
there you go.
Yeah, we actually stayed. You were mentioning Chinatown. We stayed in a hotel in Chinatown, in a cheap hotel in Chinatown that I don't even remember what the name was, but they were upgrading constantly as we were going through. But, you know, this is one of those hotels that you can find there that I think, if you sit on the bed, you could probably put your feet on the door of the room. There just wasn't any space at all in this little place. But every time you came back from Expo, there would be something new in your room. The elevator now had contact paper instead of bare metal, yes, or something like that, because all sorts of things were being built at the time for both those two events in Vancouver.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, I mean, two areas of the city that you'd want to be a little cautious. I mean, there's some great restaurants and shops and places to stay in them, but also it could be hit and miss is Gastown and Chinatown both.
Okay.
That area also encompasses probably the poorest postal code in Canada, a lot of homelessness and stuff in that area as well, but it's becoming sort of gentrified at the same time. So there's some really cool spots within that neighborhood, but it could be hit and miss for sure. Some hotels you'd want to avoid for sure.
look at the reviews on TripAdvisor.
Yes.
There's always interesting things. So when you talk about Gastown, is the neighborhood just to the west of Chinatown, getting closer to Canada Place, right between Canada Place and Chinatown, if I'm got it correctly.
Yeah, sort of northwest. That's mm-hmm. right. As you're heading towards the mountains from Chinatown, you would hit into Gastown. And that's where, if you're coming into Vancouver on cruise ships, the cruise ship terminal right at Canada Place lets you off there. Mm-hmm. And most people would sort of move from there into Gastown. And you'll find a lot of great galleries and some of the coolest restaurants in the city right in that part of the downtown as well. But it also can be, as you get further east, is where you need to be a little more cautious in terms of the homelessness and poverty and things like that.
Okay. And the Gastown steam-powered clock also there.
It is. It is. That's right. Another popular attraction. I'm trying to remember how many times a day it goes off.
I don't recall,
but you'll often see crowds from the cruise ships will come up specifically to see the steam clock.
Now, you mentioned there were a number of good restaurants in the area. Do you have a particular favorite or two?
Yeah, there's some great ones in Yale Town. I mean, if you're looking for seafood, I think probably the best restaurant in town for seafood is Blue Water Cafe. Definitely on the spendier side of things, but great fresh local seafood. Their seafood tower is amazing.
Their seafood tower.
It's like six levels of fresh seafood on ice with various different sauces and things. And
okay.
You know, fresh crab legs and fresh, okay. Yeah, all kinds of things. Great.
And you say Yale Town. So Yale Town is across from Granville Island in the main peninsula that includes Canada Place and the Stanley Park.
Sort of on the other side of downtown from Canada Place and Stanley Park. So if
okay.
you took the Granville Island Bridge from Granville Island into downtown, the first neighborhood you would hit would be Yale Town.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah, they've got the Flying Pig there, which is another great local restaurant. Rodney's Oyster House, another great place for seafood. And then between Yale Town and Chinatown, as you're getting more into the Chinatown area, a place called Shambar, which is a great Belgian restaurant. Really known for their brunch, but also a great spot for dinner as well. Lots of really inventive things always on the menu.
Okay, and you say a Belgian restaurant. Even though I've been to Belgium, I don't know what I would expect. I mean, I remember the mussels in Brussels, but what would I expect at a Belgian restaurant in Vancouver?
The mussels and fries are definitely one of their iconic dishes. Belgian waffles at breakfast.
Okay.
But it's a mix of Belgian food and Mediterranean food and always new and different things on the menu. It's great.
Excellent.
from there, another sort of great neighborhood, getting a bit out of downtown and moving back across the Granville Bridge into the city, a place called Kitsilano is where you would find a lot of the beaches in the city. So certainly if you're here in the summer, Kitsilano summer, you would want to check out. It's the kind of place where if it's a sunny day, you're certainly going to find a lot of people out, a few beach volleyball games going on, and beautiful views of the mountains and ocean from there. And also in the summer, it's sort of home to a fantastic fireworks festival that goes over about a four-week period on sort of Wednesdays and Saturdays, where you'll get 200,000 people all downtown on the beach, on both the English Bay side of the beach and over on the Kitsilano side, watching the fireworks festival.
And geography here again, the English Bay side is which side?
English Bay would be, so that's on the other side of False Creek, sort of right on the...
This is the west side of Vancouver as it faces towards Vancouver Island.
Yeah, I'm terrible with direction. You're killing me here, Chris.
But yes, I'm looking at a map here, so trust me.
Yes, so then I will defer to you. Yes. Put me in a car and I can get you there, but yeah. Yeah, so that definitely would give you a few places to check out in your first few days.
Excellent. Well, and we've mentioned it once, but we haven't really gone there yet, and there's a pretty decent park in Vancouver.
Stanley Park, for sure. A huge urban park there right in the downtown area that common thing a lot of people will do is a great place to go running on the seawall during the summertime. But it's also home to the Vancouver Aquarium, which hopefully as we get post-pandemic is somewhere that reopens, one of the real iconic attractions here in the city as well. And it's great because it's quite different from a SeaWorld type aquarium. It's much more focused on education and research and rehabilitation of local wildlife and makes a great stop.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do in the Stanley Park area while we're there?
A ton you can do. There's horse-drawn carriage rides that you can do throughout Stanley Park.
I don't think I knew that. Okay.
That's always good to check out. A lot of festivals and events that happen throughout the summer. There's a place called Malkin Bowl, which is sort of an outdoor amphitheater where they've got sort of a theater under the stars that happens during the summertime that if you happen to be in town when that's on, that's always great to check out. A lot of things like outdoor movies would happen and stuff in the park during the summer, and always lots of great events there.
Well, and that does beg the question of when do I want to come to Vancouver? Obviously, a lot of people, this is going to be on their way to Alaska or someplace like that when they're getting on or off a cruise. But if I have my choice in terms of when I should come to Vancouver, when do you think is the best time to be in Vancouver?
It depends what you love to do. I mean, if you're into like skiing in the outdoors, well, you've got literally like three ski hills that you can be at in under an hour from downtown. Mm-hmm. So that's the advantage of the winter. But definitely, if you could only come to Vancouver once, I would say June, July, August, that's really prime time where you want to be here. That's where all the festivals and events and stuff are happening. You're going to get the best weather. We've really got sort of June, July, August, and rain are the two seasons in Vancouver. So you've got to be prepared for one of the two. That's right.
Well, and when you say the festivals, your favorite festival, best day of year to be in Vancouver?
There's so many in and around the city, and a lot of them are smaller, but I really love some of the great cultural festivals that happen. I mean, the Vaisakhi parade that happens out in Surrey is really cool, and all the Indian food and events and stuff around that is great. If you go into Steveston on Canada Day, is probably one of the best places to be in the country on July 1st for Canada Day, where they've got a huge parade and stuff happening. P&E during the summer, the Pacific National Exhibition is like the well-known sort of fair that comes through during the year. Those are some of the favorites. For sure.
Okay. Cool. Where else should we go in Vancouver itself before we talk about side trips?
Well, the other thing I'd say, too, is that you wouldn't think of the airport as being an attraction in and of itself, but there's actually a ton to see when you first fly in the airport itself. It's got a huge collection of First Nations art all throughout the airport.
Okay.
And the arrival experience, like when you come in, particularly if you're coming through, I'm not sure if it's through U.S., arrivals, you come through the same area, but certainly all the international arrivals, I'm sure US you would as well, as you're
technically
coming down,
we are international from you. I just
you are, but they're separate US and international terminals. I know. But I think as you both get funneled through the same area for passport control, which takes you through this fantastic sort of walkway where it's done up like a rainforest with totem poles and First Nations art, and you wouldn't think of that being like an attraction in the airport, but it's actually really cool. They've got massive aquarium featuring stuff from the Vancouver Aquarium. And they just recently have brought in some of the more well-known restaurants from around the city and have set up shop in various places throughout the airport as well. So it's worth spending some time in. Unlike most airports where you're happy to get in and out as quickly as possible, it's actually one where the arrival departure experience is quite cool.
I do like the Vancouver airport. I will give you that. That is, that is true. I will back that up. Well, and you mentioned totem poles, and we didn't say that also one of the popular things to see in Stanley Park is a collection of totem poles that are there, or at least one of the touristy things to see. I don't know if it's popular with the locals or not.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. That's definitely worth seeing and worth checking out. Once you get into Stanley Park as well, then you're quite a short trip to get across the Lionsgate Bridge over to West Vancouver and North Vancouver, which are, they're actually separate municipalities, although they're both called Vancouver as well, but they've got their own set of attractions. I mean, in North Vancouver, the one that I would definitely seek out and try and spend some time in is a place called Deep Cove. That's this beautiful inlet on the ocean there where they rent out stand-up paddle boards, they rent out kayaks. Hmm. You'll feel like you are 1,000 miles outside of the city in this little cove that's, you know, 40 minutes from downtown. Makes a great place to stop for the day. There's a very famous hike there called the Quarry Rock Hike. Probably only about I'm going to guess here and say like a 4 or 5 kilometer hike, short hike up a mountain that gives you beautiful views of Deep Cove and all the sort of up Indian Arm and the ocean and mountains in that whole area as well.
I do not know that one. Okay.
That's definitely on a summer day, like Deep Cove can't be beat. I think it's really one of the most beautiful, beautiful areas from a nature standpoint that you're going to find in the city, and particularly if you like doing outdoor activities, a great place to go spend some time. On the complete opposite end of the city, if you're to go further to the south, again, get a little bit out of Vancouver into another one of the surrounding municipalities called Richmond, has a little village, it's part of Richmond called Steveston, which I'd mentioned there earlier, their Canada Day Festival. But the other couple of things that Steveston is great for is they've got a huge harbor there with boats coming in all the time, fishing boats coming in off the ocean. And you can go right up and buy fresh seafood off the boats pretty much all year round, that you can go and do that from the harbor market there. It used to be the site of a fish cannery, and they've got like a historic museum that you can tour through, the Gulf of Georgia cannery. That's sort of a neat little side diversion to go check out there as well. And really cool little historic fishing village right within the city.
Excellent. What else?
The other thing that I think Vancouver is sort of known for and maybe makes it a bit unique in terms of cities in North America is just in terms of wildlife and stuff that you can get out and see within a short drive or short hikes from the city. I mean, our family just recently went out to a suburb called Coquitlam, a hike up to a waterfall there. And I mean, we were only 40 minutes from downtown and saw 2 black bears out on our hike.
Huh.
That's not unusual once you get over on the North Shore. Lots of great hikes that you can do there, and you'd see a ton of wildlife. If you want to be guaranteed of seeing wildlife, if you go up Grouse Mountain, one of the 3 ski hills on the North Shore during the summertime, they've got a tram up there up to the top, and they've got a grizzly bear habitat, an enclosed one there that you're always guaranteed to obviously see some bears there. So that's, I know, something a lot of people, when you're coming to Canada, something that you want to see is some of the local wildlife. So one way that you can always find some. And then a ton of companies that do whale watching trips, some that leave right from Cole Harbor in the downtown area. And then Steveston, that fishing village area that I mentioned earlier, has a couple that leave right from there as well.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do in... Actually, tell me what you're skipping in Vancouver. What other thing people are going to recommend that you do and you're not talking about, because honestly, you would recommend we do something else.
You've got me on that, Chris. I'm trying to think of what the tired attraction that I wouldn't wreck. Well, maybe one of them, there's the Vancouver Lookout, which is like a Space Needle type tower
in
downtown with a revolving restaurant. A lot of people who come off the cruise ships, so that's an easy thing to do. So a lot of people will pop up there for the views. It's probably not worth the price of admission in my view. You can get a much better view going up Grouse Mountain or some of the local more natural areas than up the tower.
Okay. I notice you're not mentioning Capilano Bridge, for instance, which is another popular tourist attraction.
Yeah, Capilano Bridge is great. Certainly worth checking out. I mean, it's a beautiful suspension bridge right in the middle of the rainforest. It's really beautiful, particularly in the winter. They do a great, not this year because of what's happened with COVID, but normally in most years, they do an amazing Christmas display there. Mm-hmm. So certainly if you're here in the winter, I would go check out Capilano Suspension Bridge. If you're here in the summer, one thing I would say is it's a bit overpriced, and rather than doing Capilano Bridge, there's another bridge called the Lynn Valley Canyon Suspension Bridge, which is actually free. Very similar to Capilano Suspension Bridge, although you don't have some of the interpretive trails and stuff that you would find at Capilano.
Well, I think in my opinion, Capilano got better when they added some of the other things, like they have a treetop walk and they have a, I can't think of what the other thing is, where you're out over a gorge in a glass walkway and things like that. They added more things and they have some cultural things. So it is not inexpensive. So it's good to know the alternative there. But I think it got more interesting to me than the first time I went, when it was just a big suspension bridge over a gorge.
They have added a lot to it. And if you go during Christmas time, there's even that much more, because then they've got carolers, they've got food, mm-hmm. they've got all these other things that they add on to it as well. But yeah, it's worth checking out. The good thing, if you go with a local, they only have to pay once. And for the same price of a single admission, they get an annual pass. If you've got some local friends who want to come along, they get a good deal with taking you there.
Good to know. And again, that's David Brody. We'll spell that out in the show notes. And then anything else we want to do before we get to some side trips?
The other sort of thing, strangely, that Vancouver is becoming a bit of a hotspot for is ice cream. There's like some great ice cream parlors in town now.
Okay.
Three of my favorites, there's a place called Rain and Shine Ice Cream. I think great name, obviously, for fits Vancouver well. And I think of the three I'm going to mention, they have the best ice cream of the three. But then there's another one called Ernest Ice Cream, which is also great. And they do some very cool locally infused sort of things. Like they have one that has spruce tips is their main flavor in the ice cream. But then all the traditional flavors and stuff as well. They've got a couple of locations around the city now. And then the old school one is a place called Casa de Gelato, which probably been around for, I would guess, 50 plus years at least, and has a rotating hundreds of flavors on tap. Anything you can imagine. They have created an ice cream flavor to go with it, from pear and gorgonzola to Vegemite to you name it, they have created it. And they have a rotating constant thing of flavors, and you can get samples of as many of them as you want as well before you decide what you want. So you can try a wide variety there.
Okay. And now, are we ready to get out of town?
Sure.
You mentioned a couple places. We've mentioned Vancouver Island just briefly, and you mentioned Whistler a bit. Where are you going to recommend if I have a couple more days?
If you could only go one other place, I would say for sure to get up to Whistler.
Okay.
I mean, a fantastic ski hill. If you're a skier, snowboarder, definitely have to spend a day skiing and snowboarding up there. It's just crazy the amount of terrain and skiing that you can do up there. But also, it's even if you've never been on skis before, you will find no shortage of things to do.
And I will admit, I am not a skier. I haven't skied in years, and I loved our trip to Whistler, but we went there in July.
Okay.
So we went there where you're taking the gondolas up and you're hiking around and still looking over the other side and seeing a glacier. And it's also a beautiful summer destination and half the price.
Yeah, although it's now getting almost as busy in the summer as the winter because of mountain biking, right? It's a huge destination for mountain biking, and you can tons of trails that you can go on around the village itself, but then you can also get lift pass and actually head up the mountain with your bike and do some crazy mountain biking terrain up in there. But also, if you want to just have a really relaxing couple of days, a great newer addition in the last 5 or 6 years that they've built up there, the Scandinav Spa, which is this Scandinavian spa outdoor complex that they've built where multiple pools and saunas and things, and you can spend the whole day just going from pool to pool all around out there with the mountain views and everything. And in the summer, I mean, great concerts and events and stuff happening in Whistler all the time to check out as well.
Cool.
The other thing, too, is as you go up to Whistler, you're going to pass through some great stops along the way. There's the Britannia Mining Museum, which is an old abandoned mine that you can go and tour. It's only open during the summer, but a great stop to do during the summer. It's also a place where a lot of movies get filmed. If you ever watch any of the superhero shows, like The Flash or Supergirl, you'll often see the Britannia Mining Museum is featured there. It's various different things. And then right after that, you get into a little community called Squamish. Mm-hmm. Which is a small town, but that is really a jumping off point for a ton of great adventures in the region. It's known for kayaking, known for hiking, and really makes a great place to base yourself. And it's
climbing too, I believe.
Yeah. Fantastic mountain climbing there. They've got a great Sea to Sky gondola there that you can take up. And if you want more of just a light adventure trip that takes you up above the city and has some great hiking trails up there. In the winter, it's got great snowshoeing trails that you can go check out as well.
I will say I have also done the package thing where you take the train up to Squamish or the boat back or the boat up and the train back. I wouldn't say that was the best use of a trip to Squamish, I would have to say.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's such a beautiful drive. Like if you've got a rental car, that Sea to Sky Highway makes such a great drive. And then you can stop at places like Shannon Falls. It's this incredible waterfall that's just literally a 2-minute walk, right? You just pull off the highway and then you see this amazing waterfall just off the highway. Porto Cove, which is a little provincial park there that if you want to do camping, is a great campsite right on the ocean side there as well.
Okay, excellent. Anything else we want to do if you're going to do a week-long trip in the area? Have we filled up our week already?
One other place I'll mention just if you're in Whistler is if you keep going a little past Whistler, another very cool town called Pemberton. And on the way there, a couple of waterfalls and provincial parks and stuff that you would see along the way. So if you're going to do the drive up to Whistler, worth checking out Pemberton and some of the hiking and stuff around there if you've got time to. But then coming back to the city, you really then got to decide if you want to go inland and explore, and there's lots to see there, or if you want to get on a ferry and go check out some of the nearby islands. There's the whole range of Gulf islands that each have their own sort of things to see and do on it. And then Vancouver Island, which is massive, where you could go spend easily 2-3 weeks just exploring Vancouver Island.
And you say the Gulf Islands. I have been in a few of the U.S. Gulf Islands, the San Juans, but I haven't I've been to Vancouver Island, the big one. And I don't know which one I would go to first.
I would probably, it depends how much time you've got. I mean, the Gulf Islands, any of them are good for probably a 2-3 day visit. Places like Pender Island is a beautiful one. It's got a ton of hiking trails, parks, restaurants, great stuff to see and do on Pender. A really cool resort there called Woods on Pender, which is one of my favorite local destinations. Salt Spring Island, which is known for its Sunday market. They've got a great Sunday farmers market there. And again, lots of cool little places to stay on there. But all those islands, I would say, like, if you're there for 2 days, 3 days, you've looped the island, you've seen most of what you're going to see on any of those, versus Vancouver Island, where there's just so much to explore. Everything from surfing over in a place like Tofino to Victoria, the capital city of the province, which has got the beautiful parliament buildings, waterfront, and a ton to see and do.
Excellent. Well, we've talked about Victoria before, but I don't know if we're going to get there on this particular episode. I think we're going to start to wind this one down. Some wrap-up questions for you, David. You were standing in the prettiest spot in Vancouver. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would probably be in a double kayak in the middle of Deep Cove, flicking up Indian Arm. Just a beautiful place to go do a day trip, and such an easy thing to do that I think a lot of people come and go from the city and never get a chance to go visit.
Well, and one of the things that I think makes Vancouver uniquely beautiful is the mixture of water and mountains. And so you're in one of those arms of the water that is going inland and looking up at the mountains right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And it wouldn't be unusual to get orcas coming through, to get seals coming through. It's a beautiful spot.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Vancouver.
That you can't find a table at a restaurant anywhere in downtown after a hockey game. Oh, he's so popular here. And if you're in town, when the Canucks are in town, it's definitely, you've got to go get some tickets and go check out a game, because it definitely gets a huge part of Canadian culture and a huge part of culture here in the city as well.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Vancouver, British Columbia in just 3 words, what 3 words are you going to use?
It's slightly more than 3. I was going to say the best place on earth, but that's a few more than 3.
I give you 4. You know, this is your 4th time on the show, so maybe you get a bonus word.
That's right.
Excellent. And you can find David's podcast at travelin10.com. I don't think you have an episode on Vancouver, though.
I've done some episodes where we've touched on Vancouver, but never a full episode on it. Although recently, myself and Tim Johnson, who's a travel journalist who writes for Globe and Mail here in Canada and writes for Travel Leisure down in the U.S., we talked about some more domestic travel things for Canadians that you can still do during the pandemic, and we touched a little bit on Vancouver in one of those episodes.
Okay, we'll put a link to that in the show notes then.
Sounds good.
David, thanks so much for coming back on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for one of my favorite cities, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Well, it's always good fun. Thanks, Chris.
In news of the community, first thanks go out to the patrons of the show, especially to our latest patron, Tim Baylor. Thanks so much, Tim, and thanks to all of you who help support Amateur Traveler. You also can support it by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. For the show that we did last week on Slovakia, I had a comment from Daryl who said, "Hey, Chris, great episode on Slovakia. Even though I have been to two cities in Slovakia, Bratislava and Banská Štiavnica, it is nice to hear about things I missed while I was there. With both cities, I was there for a few hours. Another way to get to Bratislava is to take the high-speed ferry from Vienna. The trip took 1.5 hours by boat. I have also walked to the train station. It was not as bad as they mentioned in the podcast, but it is a long walk from the old town. By the train station, you are close to an interesting colored TV tower. Every city that used to be part of the Iron Bloc seems to have one. I hope to get back to Bratislava because I really love it. And thanks to this podcast, I might be motivated to get back to Banská Štiavnica as well, since I see I can get there easily from Bratislava. I love that even with places I have been to, I always learn something new about a place, and I'm known to really cover a city. Thanks." And Daryl, you are known to cover a city. Daryl will walk his feet off when he gets to a city, as I have learned from traveling with him. I also heard from Simon, who said, "Thanks for your podcast. I've been an avid listener since COVID steered me towards dreams of travel rather than the real thing. I just listened to your Slovakia episode and had a couple of thoughts of things I might have added from my very limited 48-hour experience there 6 years ago. The first thing was practical. We arrived by train from Vienna and suddenly realized we had no idea which direction the center of Bratislava was from the train station. We managed to catch a bus, but only after finding someone who spoke English well enough to tell us which bus headed that way. That train station is nowhere near the city center, and the Slovakian language, as you suggested during the podcast, gives few clues. I'd love to have heard some locals' tips on getting from the train into the center in the easiest way." And that's a good reminder for me to ask that question. "Your Bratislava lady had good suggestions for budget accommodation, but your listeners might like the hotel we stayed in, which was mid-range and great for film buffs like me. Called the Film Hotel, it has lovely 1930s architecture, but also hallways with walls covered in photos of Hollywood movie stars, and each room has a theme of a movie star. But our highlight in Bratislava was discovering the connection to a former U.S. president. I'm sure your American listeners would love to know that Bratislava was, for a short period of time, just after World War I, called Wilsonov in recognition of Woodrow Wilson's work for Czech and Slovak independence. When we visited there in 2014, there was a big memorial covered in stars and stripes devoted to Wilson. That seems to have gone now, but there is still a memorial bust to him in the center of the city, and I'm sure many American visitors would love to pay their respects if they went. Keep up the good work, and I hope you don't mind the occasional suggestion if I hear shows missing something we have liked on our own travels. All the best, Simon." And no, I don't mind that at all, and get out is how I had to respond to Simon. I did not know that Bratislava was named for a brief period of time after Woodrow Wilson, and I just loved it when I heard that. And speaking of suggestions for Slovakia, Jeff Ulfs also recommended, "I wanted to mention rafting the Dunajec River Gorge between Poland and Slovakia. That is a great, easy float trip." Thanks to Daryl and to Simon and to Jeff for your great suggestions. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.